It should be no surprise that Elend became such a powerful allomancer. It is a well-documented fact, though that documentation wasn't available to most, that allomancers were much stronger during the early days of the Final Empire. In those days, an allomancer didn't need Duralumin to take control of a Chondra or Kolos. A simple push or pull on the emotions was enough. In fact, this ability was one of the main reasons that the Chondra devised their contracts with the humans. For at that time, not only Mistborn, but soothers and rioters could take control of them at the merest of whims. 21. Dumu survived. He was one of the larger group, the 15% who grew sick but did not die. Vin sat atop the cabin of her narrow boat, arm resting on a wooden ledge, idly fingering her mother's earring, which, as always, she wore in her ear. Kolos brutes trudged along the towpath, dragging the barges and boats down the canal. Many of the barges still carried supplies, tents, foodstuffs, pure water. Several had been emptied, however, their contents carried on the backs of the surviving soldiers, making room for the wounded. Vin turned away from the barges, looking toward the front of the narrow boat. Elend stood at the prow, as usual, staring west. He did not brood. He looked like a king, standing straight-backed, staring determinedly toward his goal. He looked so different now from the man he had once been, with his full beard, his longer hair, his uniforms that had been scrubbed white. They were growing worn. Not ragged, they were still clean and sharp, as white as things could get in the current state of the world. They were just no longer new. They were the uniforms of a man who had been at war for 2 years straight. Vin knew him well enough to sense that all was not well. However, she also knew him well enough to sense that he didn't want to talk about it for the moment. She stood and stepped down, burning pewter unconsciously to heighten her balance. She slid a book off a bench beside the boat's edge and settled down quietly. Elend would talk to her eventually. He always did. For the moment, she had something else to engage her. She opened the book to the marked page and reread a particular paragraph. "The deepness must be destroyed," the words said. "I have seen it, and I have felt it. This name we give it is too weak a word, I think. Yet it is deep and unfathomable, but it is also terrible. Many do not realize that it is sentient, but I have sensed its mind, such as it is, the few times I have confronted it directly." She eyed the page for a moment, sitting back on her bench. Beside her, the canal waters passed, covered with a froth of floating ash. The book was Elendi's logbook. It had been written 1,000 years before by a man who had thought himself to be the hero of ages. Elendi hadn't completed his quest. He had been killed by one of his servants, Rashik, who had then taken the power at the Well of Ascension and become the Lord Ruler. Elendi's story was frighteningly close to Vin's own. She had also assumed herself to be the hero of ages. She had traveled to the well, and had been betrayed. She, however, hadn't been betrayed by one of her servants, but instead by the force imprisoned within the well. That force was, she assumed, behind the prophecies about the hero of ages in the first place. "Why do I keep coming back to this paragraph?" she thought, eyeing it again. Perhaps it was because of what Human had said to her, that the mists hated her. She had felt that hatred herself, and it appeared that Elendi had felt the same thing. But could she even trust the logbook's words? The force she had released, the thing she called ruin, had proven that it could change things in the world. Small things, yet important ones. Like the text of a book, which was why Ellen's officers were now instructed to send all messages via memorized words or letters etched into metal. Regardless, if there had been any clues to be gained by reading the logbook, ruin would have removed them long ago. Vin felt as if she'd been led by the nose for the last 3 years, pulled by invisible strings. She had thought she was having revelations and making great discoveries, but all she'd really been doing was following Ruin's bidding. Yet Ruin is not omnipotent, Vin thought. If it were, there would have been no fight. It wouldn't have needed to trick me into releasing it. It cannot know my thoughts. Even that knowledge was frustrating. What good were her thoughts? Always before, she'd had Sazed, Elland, or Tensun to talk with about problems like this. This wasn't a task for Vin. She was no scholar. Yet Sazed had turned his back on his studies, Tensun had returned to his people, and Elland was far too busy lately to worry about anything but his army and its politics. That left Vin. And she still found reading and scholarship to be stuffy and boring. Yet she was also becoming more and more comfortable with the idea of doing what was necessary, even if she found it distasteful. She was no longer just her own person. She belonged to the new empire. She had been its knife. Now it was time to try a different role. "I have to do it," she thought, sitting in the red sunlight. "There is a puzzle here, something to be solved. What was it Kelsier liked to say? There's always another secret." She remembered Kelsier standing boldly before a small group of thieves, proclaiming that they would overthrow the Lord Ruler and free the Empire. "We're thieves," he'd said, "and we're extraordinarily good ones. We can rob the unrobbable and fool the unfoolable. We know how to take an incredibly large task and break it down to manageable pieces, and then deal with each of those pieces." That day, when he'd written up the team's goals and plans on a small board, Vin had been amazed by how possible he had made an impossible task seem. That day, a little bit of her had begun to believe that Kelsier could overthrow the final empire. "All right," Vin thought. "I'll begin like Kelsier did, by listing the things that I know for certain." There had been a power at the Well of Ascension, so that much about the stories was true. There had also been something alive, imprisoned in or near the well. It had tricked Vin into using the power to destroy its bonds. Maybe she could have used that power to destroy Ruin instead, but she'd given it up. She sat thoughtfully, tapping her finger against the back of the logbook. She could still remember wisps of what it had felt like to hold that power. It had awed her, yet at the same time felt natural and right. In fact, while she held it, everything had felt natural. The workings of the world, the ways of men. It was like the power had been more than simple capability. It had been understanding as well. That was a tangent. She needed to focus on what she knew before she could philosophize on what she needed to do. The power was real, and Ruin was real. Ruin had retained some ability to change the world while confined. Sazed had confirmed that his texts had been altered to suit Ruin's purpose. Now Ruin was free, and Vin assumed that it was behind the violent mist killings and the falling ash. "Though," she reminded herself, "I don't know either of those things for certain." What did she know about Ruin? She had touched it, felt it, in that moment she had released it. It had a need to destroy, yet it was not a force of simple chaos. It didn't act randomly. It planned and thought. And it didn't seem to be able to do anything it wanted, almost as if it followed specific rules. She paused. "Elland," she called. The Emperor turned from his place beside the prow. "What is the first rule of Allomancy?" Vin asked. "The first thing I taught you."
"Consequence," Elland said. "Every action has consequences. When you push on something heavy, it will push you back. If you push on something light, it will fly away."
It was the first lesson that Kelsier had taught Vin, as well as, she assumed, the first lesson his master had taught him.
"It's a good rule," Elland said, turning back to his contemplation of the horizon. "It works for all things in life. If you throw something into the air, it will come back down. If you bring an army into a man's kingdom, he will react.
Consequence, she thought, frowning. Like things falling back when thrown into the sky. That's what Ruin's actions feel like to me. Consequences.
Perhaps it was a remnant of touching the power, or perhaps just some rationalization her unconscious mind was giving her. Yet she felt a logic to Ruin. She didn't understand that logic, but she could recognize it. Elland turned back toward her. That's why I like allomancy, actually. Or at least, the theory of it. The Ska whisper about it, call it mystical. But it's really quite rational. You can tell what an allomantic push is going to do as certainly as you can tell what will happen when you drop a rock off the side of the boat. For every push, there is a pull. There are no exceptions. It makes simple, logical sense, unlike the ways of men, which are filled with flaws, irregularities, and double meanings. Allomancy is a thing of nature.
A thing of nature. For every push, there is a pull, a consequence. That's important, Vin whispered.
What?
A consequence.
The thing she had felt at the Well of Ascension had been a thing of destruction, like Alendi described in his logbook. But it hadn't been a creature, not like a person. It had been a force, a thinking force, but a force nonetheless. And forces had rules. Allomancy, weather, even the pull of the ground. The world was a place that made sense, a place of logic. Every push had a pull. Every force had a consequence. She had to discover, then, the laws relating to the thing she was fighting. That would tell her how to beat it.
Vin? Elland asked, studying her face. Vin looked away.
It's nothing, Elland. Nothing I can speak of, at least.
He watched her for a moment.
He thinks that you're plotting against him, Rhen whispered from the back of her mind.
Fortunately, the days when she had listened to Rhen's words were long past. Indeed, as she watched Elland, she saw him nod slowly and accept her explanation. He turned back to his own contemplations. Vin rose, walking forward, laying a hand on his arm. He sighed, raising the arm and wrapping it around her shoulders, pulling her close. That arm, once the weak arm of a scholar, was now muscular and firm.
"What are you thinking about?" Vin asked.
"You know," Elland said.
"It was necessary, Elland. The soldiers had to get exposed to the mists eventually."
"Yes," Elland said. "But there's something more, Vin. I fear I'm becoming like him."
"Who?"
"The Lord Ruler." Vin snorted quietly, pulling closer to him. "This is something he would have done," Elland said, sacrificing his own men for a tactical advantage.
"You explained this to Ham," Vin said. "We can't afford to waste time."
"It's still ruthless," Elland said. "The problem isn't that those men died. It's that I was so willing to make it happen. I feel... brutal, Vin. How far will I go to see my goals achieved? I'm marching on another man's kingdom to take it from him."
"For the greater good?"
"That has been the excuse of tyrants throughout all time. I know it. Yet I press on. This is why I didn't want to be emperor. This is why I let Penrod take my throne from me back during the siege. I didn't want to be the kind of leader who had to do things like this. I want to protect, not besiege and kill. But is there any other way? Everything I do seems like it must be done. Like exposing my own men in the mists. Like marching on Fadrick City. We have to get to that storehouse. It's the only lead we have that could even possibly give us some clue as to what we're supposed to do. It all makes such sense. Ruthless, brutal sense."
"Ruthlessness is the very most practical of emotions," Rhen's voice whispered. She ignored it. "You've been listening to Set too much."
"Perhaps," Elland said. yet his is a logic I find difficult to ignore. I grew up as an idealist, Vin. We both know that's true. Set provides a kind of balance. The things he says are much like what Tyndall used to say.
He paused, shaking his head.
Just a short time ago I was talking with Set about allomantic snapping. Do you know what the noble houses did to ensure that they found the allomancers among their children?
They had them beaten, Vin whispered. A person's allomantic powers were always latent until something traumatic brought them out. A person had to be brought to the brink of death and survive. Only then would their powers be awakened. It was called snapping.
Ellen nodded. It was one of the great, dirty secrets of so-called noble life. Families often lost children to the beatings. Those beatings had to be brutal for them to evoke allomantic abilities. Each house was different, but they generally specified an age before adolescence. When a boy or girl hit that age, they were taken and beaten near to death.
Vin shivered slightly.
I vividly remember mine, Ellen said. Father didn't beat me himself, but he did watch. The saddest thing about the beatings was that most of them were pointless. Only a handful of children, even noble children, became allomancers. I didn't. I was beaten for nothing.
You stopped those beatings, Elland, Vin said softly.
He had drafted a bill soon after becoming king. A person could choose to undergo a supervised beating when they came of age, but Elland had stopped it from happening to children.
And I was wrong, Elland said softly.
Vin looked up.
Allomancers are our most powerful resource, Vin, Elland said, looking out over the marching soldiers. Set lost his kingdom, nearly his life, because he couldn't marshal enough allomancers to protect him. And I made it illegal to search out allomancers in my population.
Elland, you stopped the beating of children.
And if those beatings could save lives, Elland asked, like exposing my soldiers could save lives? What about Kelsier? He only gained his powers as a Mistborn after he was trapped in the pits of Hathsin. What would have happened if he'd been beaten properly as a child? He would always have been Mistborn. He could have saved his wife.
And then wouldn't have had the courage or motivation to overthrow the final empire.
And is what we have any better? Elland asked. The longer I've held this throne, Vin, the more I've come to realize that some of the things the Lord Ruler did weren't evil, but simply effective. Right or wrong, he maintained order in his kingdom.
Vin looked up, catching his eyes, forcing him to look down at her. I don't like this hardness in you, Elland.
He looked out over the blackened canal waters. It doesn't control me, Vin. I don't agree with most of the things the Lord Ruler did. I'm just coming to understand him. And that understanding worries me.
She saw questions in his eyes, but also strengths. He looked down and met her eyes.
I can hold this throne only because I know that at one point I was willing to give it up in the name of what was right. If I ever lose that, Vin, you need to tell me. All right.
Vin nodded. Elland looked back at the horizon again. What is it he hopes to see, Vin thought.
There has to be a balance, Vin, he said. Somehow we'll find it. The balance between whom we wish to be and whom we need to be.
He sighed.
But for now, he said, nodding to the side, we simply have to be satisfied with who we are.
Vin glanced to the side as a small courier skiff from one of the other narrow boats pulled up alongside theirs. A man in simple brown robes stood upon it. He wore large spectacles, as if attempting to obscure the intricate ministry tattoos around his eyes, and he was smiling happily. Vin smiled herself. Once she had thought that a happy obligator was always a bad sign.
That was before she'd known Nurdin. Even during the days of the Lord Ruler, the contented scholar had probably lived most of his life in his own little world. He provided a strange proof that even in the confines of what had once been, in her opinion, the most evil organization in the Empire, one could find good men.
"Your Excellency," Nurdin said, stepping off of the skiff and bowing.
A couple of assistant scribes joined him on the deck, lugging books and ledgers.
"Nurdin,"
Elend said, joining the man on the foredeck. Vin followed.
"You have done the counts I asked?"
"Yes, Your Excellency,"
Nurdin said as an aide opened up a ledger on a pile of boxes.
"I must say, this was a difficult task, what with the army moving about and the like."
"I'm certain you were thorough as always, Nurdin," Ellen said.
He glanced at the ledger, which seemed to make sense to him, though all Vin saw was a bunch of random numbers.
"What's it say?" she asked.
"It lists the number of sick and dead," Ellen said. "Of our 38,000, nearly 6,000 were taken by the sickness. We lost about 550.
"Including one of my own scribes," Nurdin said, shaking his head.
Vin frowned. Not at the death, at something else, something itching at her mind.
"Fewer dead than expected," Elend said, pulling thoughtfully at his beard.
"Yes, Your Excellency," Nurdin said. "I guess these soldier types are more rugged than the average Scar population. The sickness, whatever it is, didn't strike them as hard."
"How do you know?" Vin asked, looking up. "How do you know how many should have died?"
"Previous experience, my lady," Nurdin said in his chatty way. "We've been tracking these deaths with some interest. Since the disease is new, we're trying to determine exactly what causes it. Perhaps that will lead us to a way to treat it. I've had my scribes reading what they can, trying to find clues of other diseases like this. It seems a little like the Shakewells, though that's usually brought on by—"
"Nurdin," Vin said, frowning. "You have figures, then? Exact numbers?"
"That's what His Excellency asked for, my lady."
"How many fell sick to the disease?" Vin asked. "Exactly."
"Well, let me see," Nurdin said, shooing his scribe away and checking the ledger. 5,243.
"What percentage of the soldiers is that?" Vin asked. Nurdin paused, then waved over a scribe and did some calculations.
"About 13.5%, m'lady," he finally said, adjusting his spectacles.
Vin frowned.
"Did you include the men who died in your calculations?"
"Actually, no," Nurdin said.
"And which total did you use?" Vin asked. "The total number of men in the army, or the total number who hadn't been in the mists before?"
"The first."
"Do you have a count for the second number?" Vin asked.
"Yes, m'lady," Nurdin said. "The Emperor wanted an accurate count of which soldiers would be affected."
"Use that number instead," Vin said, glancing at Elend. He seemed interested.
"What is this about, Vin?" he asked as Nurdin and his men worked.
"I'm not sure," Vin said.
"Numbers are important for generalizations," Elend said, "but I don't see how—"
He trailed off as Nurdin looked up from his calculations, then cocked his head, saying something softly to himself.
"What?" Vin asked. "I'm sorry, my lady," Nurdin said. "I was just a bit surprised. The calculation came out to be exact. Precisely 16% of the soldiers fell sick. To the man."
"A coincidence, Nurdin," Ellen said. "It isn't that remarkable for calculations to come out exact."
Ash blew across the deck.
"No," Nurdin said. "No, you are right, Your Excellency. A simple coincidence."
"Check your ledgers," Vin said. "Find percentages based on other groups of people who have caught this disease."
"Vin," Ellen said, "I'm no statistician, but I have worked with numbers in my research. Sometimes natural phenomena produce seemingly odd results, but the chaos of statistics actually results in normalization. It might appear strange that our numbers broke down to an exact percentage, but that's just the way that statistics work."
16, Norden said.
He looked up.
Another exact percentage.
Ellen frowned, stepping over to the ledger.
This third one here isn't exact, Norden said, but that's only because the base number isn't a multiple of 25. A fraction of a person can't really become sick, after all. Yet the sickness in this population here is within a single person of being exactly 16%.
Ellen knelt down, heedless of the ash that had dusted the deck since it had last been swept. Vin looked over his shoulder, scanning the numbers.
It doesn't matter how old the average member of the population is, Norden said, scribbling, nor does it matter where they live. Each one shows the exact same percentage of people falling sick.
How could we have not noticed this before? Ellen asked.
Well, we did, after a fashion, Norden said. We knew that about 4 in 25 caught the sickness. However, I hadn't realized how exact the numbers were. This is indeed odd, Your Excellency. I know of no other disease that works this way. Look, here's an entry where 100 scouts were sent into the mists, and precisely 16 of them fell sick.
Ellen looked troubled.
What?
Vin asked. This is wrong, Vin, Ellen said. Very wrong.
It's like the chaos of normal random statistics has broken down, Norden said. A population should never react this precisely. There should be a curve of probability, with smaller populations reflecting the expected percentages least accurately.
At the very least, Ellen said, the sickness should affect the elderly in different ratios from the healthy.
In a way, it does, Norden said, as one of his assistants handed him a paper with further calculations. The deaths respond that way, as we would expect. But the total number who fall sick is always 16%. We've been paying so much attention to how many died, we didn't notice how unnatural the percentages of those stricken were.
Ellen stood.
Check on this, Norden, he said, gesturing toward the ledger. Do interviews, make certain that the data hasn't been changed by ruin, and find out if this trend holds. We can't jump to conclusions with only 4 or 5 examples. It could all just be a large coincidence.
Yes, Your Excellency, Norden said, looking a bit shaken. But what if it's not a coincidence? What does it mean?
I don't know, Ellen said.
It means consequence, Vin thought. It means that there are laws, even if we don't understand them. 16. Why 16%?